Hey everybody, and welcome back to the J&J Pharmacy Podcast with your hosts Jared and John. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for asking, Jared. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Really excited because we have an amazing guest on today's episode. He received his Bachelor of Pharmacy from the University of Alberta in 2012. He currently works at the Self Health Campus facility in Calgary, where he's responsible for establishing their current orthopedic surgical and pre-admission clinic pharmacy practice. So he's really the pioneer there. And I'm just super, super excited to have him on. Thank you, Nathan Morin, for joining us. How are you doing this evening?
Hi, no, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Not too bad.
Can't really complain. I was telling John actually before we started this, got to go for a run. I don't know how it's like down in Calgary for the two of you, but it was 16 degrees here in Edmonton. Gorgeous day out. I went for a run for the first time outside. It was really nice to run in shorts and a t-shirt, not in a winter jacket and snow pants. So, no, it was
Yeah,
good. What's it?
ate my lunch outside today
Ooh.
instead of like sitting, like 10 feet away from people wearing goggles, right?
It's kind of nice when you can go outside, take off your mask, socially distance, and like just enjoy the fresh air. That is definitely a perk of summertime for sure. Before we kind of get into, the meat and potatoes of this episode and stuff, me and John, I think everybody'd be really interested in, how did you go from graduating pharmacy school to kind of pioneering what you're doing today with your practice? And if you don't mind walking us through kind of that timeline, how you
Yeah,
got that.
sure. It's like it's not very inspiring, I don't think. It was like I was in your position, and now I think you guys are like in your third year.
Second year, second
Second
year.
year. Okay. So I was like in my third year, right, of pharmacy school, or fourth year, and I did my fourth year rotation at the Rocket View Hospital here in Calgary, right, on one of the hospitalist units, so like kind of general medicine. Not sick enough to be under internal medicine, but like they need to be in the hospital. And then the next semester, I heard a lot about that there's like this hospital opening up, and a bunch of my classmates were applying there. So I figured I would apply there too, because my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, she wanted to move back to Calgary, right? So I was like, okay, yeah, like I'll look for jobs in Calgary because that's where we want to end up. And I got the job. So I started working hospital straight out of school. I think it helped me a lot that when I was in pharmacy school, I worked at a cemetery as part of the groundskeeping crew, and a pharmacy, right, like everybody does. So I had a lot of like a little bit, so like most of the time during our interview, we actually talked about that instead of what I did, in pharmacy. And then when I started working, right, like the hospital wasn't open yet. So they put me on loan to the Rocky View because I had already done my rotation there. So they're like, okay, well, for 3 months, you're going to work at the Rocky View instead of working at this empty building. So I showed up at the Rocky View, and the CPL there, Alex, she was like, well, we've never had somebody in orthopedic surgery, on the eighth floor. So that's where you're gonna go because we have like a free worker for like 3 months. And so that was a Wednesday, and that was like the Wednesday I was licensed, and then I had till Friday to like review papers and stuff. And then the next Monday, I went up to the unit and I was like, hey, I'm a pharmacist, like I'm gonna be your pharmacist. And then I kind of figured out what to do for the next 3 months, which is also like it was very helpful because like there wasn't anyone up there that was a pharmacist, so I had no expectations, right? So I showed up and I was like, I don't know what to do, and they didn't know what I should be doing. So I just started doing whatever, and I was like, oh, you guys are really bad at this. Like I can help out doing this, and so I just started picking up areas that they weren't great at. And then when I moved over to the Self Health Campus because we were going to open. They just figured they would plop me down in surgery because that's what I was already doing. And we had a pre-admission clinic, so we had an inpatient unit and then a pre-admission clinic as well, coverage. So then we just showed up in the clinic, right, and started figuring out what to do there, started figuring out what to do on the unit. And then slowly, kind of just ingrained ourselves in the process. Yeah.
I just have a question really quick. Sorry, Jared. Like,
oh, go ahead.
When you started off, like when you were doing your fourth year rotation at Rocky View and then moving to South Health campus, what was pharmacy practice in the hospital like at that point? I mean, right now you're doing all these amazing things, but you said you're going into a place where they never had a pharmacist before. How did they treat you? Like, I'm really curious.
I think when I started, like, this is on like the surgery unit, right? Cause like on the hospitalist unit, they kind of already knew my job was to, like, on my fourth year rotation, my job was to, like, you know, look to see if people were on their home meds and if they're being like treated appropriately for whatever they're admitted with. On a surgery unit, they, like, I showed up and like, it took a couple of weeks to kind of figure out what to do. Cause I didn't know what to do either. And they didn't know what I should be doing. So I kind of, like, well, I started, you know, reviewing patients, like their charts and like their labs and everything. And then I started kind of realizing where I could fill a gap. And at that time it was like the big gap that could be filled was like people's home meds were awful. Right. So I did a lot of like figuring out what medications they were on, like a lot of med rec, because the process at that time on that unit wasn't that great. So like I did a lot of med rec, and then a lot of, like, I don't know, putting people back on their warfarin, right? Cause the DOACs were just coming out. So everybody was on warfarin who needed anticoagulants. So there's a lot of like restarting warfarin and like restarting home meds. And then the nurses and the nurse practitioner that worked on the unit and like the surgeons were like, oh, this is awesome. This guy's doing this for us. So they just let me. Right. Cause I was like making their life easier, you know, cause they were like doing this thing that they didn't really want to do as much. Cause it was on top of everything else they were doing for this patient. And then I come in, I'm like, hey, I'm the medication guy. And I just started doing that. So I slowly kind of figured out like what gap I could fill and like what I could do to help out the patients. So at first, I think some of them were a little bit afraid, like they were a little bit, not afraid, but like, I think they're worried I was going to like encroach on their territory, right? And try and do something that they were already doing. And so I just tried to stay away from that. Like, I didn't want to do something they were doing. I tried to look at something like they didn't want to do and do that.
No, I think that's super, like, I think that's super interesting. So you kind of started with that. And then, like you said, you transitioned over to the South Health campus hospital, and now you're there and you're, so how has it kind of changed since you started back at the Rocky View? You said that's kind of what you're doing there. Is it when you moved over to the South Health campus, was it kind of the same sort of thing you were doing, or have you tried to grow and expand the scope kind of along with pharmacy?
Yeah, like when I moved over to the South Health campus, we like started doing surgery. Like first they were all just day surgeries, right? And like then we started doing our major surgeries orthopedics, so we do a lot of hip and knee replacements. And then of course we started getting like hip fracture admissions, and now we do like there's like plastic surgery, so they do a lot of the breast flaps for breast cancer. And then we've started doing the like gender reassignment surgeries for the upper body. So a lot of like female transitioning to male surgeries happen there too now. Cause it's like, I assume that, you know, a plastic surgeon who's really good at doing breast cancer surgery is probably can also do like getting rid of breasts, right? Cause they already get rid of breasts pretty often. And then, first it was a lot of the same thing, like a lot of med rec, like a lot of putting in home meds. And then my team, as well as some of the other people that work at the South Health campus, like best possible medication histories became like a really big deal. And especially the part of it where it's like, it's not just pharmacy's job to do this, because people wanted it to be for a long time. And so we kind of like improved the process in our pre-admission clinic for the nurses who are already working there and who are already like phoning these patients and making these med lists. So we kind of got them up to speed, and now we don't have to focus on med rec as much, right? So at first it was like a lot of med rec, you know, like a lot of figuring out, and now it's kind of transitioned to like you kind of hit on like, well, what medications do I actually need to clarify? And then how can I help this person make, like, how can I help make a good decision about this person's medical therapy? So now it's a lot of like, how do I manage these medications? Not just what medications are they on?
Okay. So instead of doing the collecting, it's more like, yeah, you know, is this medication appropriate? Do they need to be on this medication? You know, that's, yeah, and that's awesome. I think that's like, that's kind of where pharmacists can have a huge impact, right? You know, we learned that in school that obviously like the collection is obviously a huge part of it, but it does take quite a bit of time to obviously sit down with a patient and walk through all the OTC meds. And, you know, especially if a patient has a lot of chronic conditions, they're on like 30 meds and it's like, three of the same meds, but they're all slightly different doses. And it's like, it's a whole mess. Right. So, and that's really interesting that you've kind of transitioned. And that kind of is a sweet segue into, you know, this next question where, you know, you mentioned on top of, you know, doing that, that the South Health campus has a 24-hour pharmacist coverage in the dispensary, mm-hmm, and coverage in the emergency department during the day. So, you know, what is that experience kind of like, even more so, you know, for the emergency department, like what does a pharmacist do in that kind of setting? And do you believe that pharmacists will one day be covering like on all wards 24 hours a day?
I don't think we'll do all wards 24 hours a day. Like, I mean, honestly, like the dispensary overnight is like a really, it's by far the slowest time of day, right? Because like all the patients are sleeping. So there's no point in having a pharmacist on the units at night. I could see maybe like the ICU until maybe midnight or until like 11 p.m. or something. But like on my unit overnight, like nothing. The only thing that's happening is like if there's some kind of emergency, right? Or if like someone needs their sleeping pill, you know, like there's nothing to do. But Emerge, we used to have 24-hour emergency department coverage. And then we kind of cut back on the overnight shift because to kind of put resources elsewhere. But yeah, Emerge is I think one day there'll be pharmacists in all of the Emerges across the province. And ideally you would want them there. We have one there 16 hours a day from 7 a.m. until 11 p.m. And a lot of what you do is kind of like, you know, like people come in and then you look at their, why they're here, you know, like their age, their labs, and like what meds they're on. And a lot of what I do in Emerge at least is you're kind of figuring out if they're here because of a medication reason. And then you kind of learn some flags for that. Like let's say they have some kind of crazy electrolyte abnormality, like hyponatremia, right? Like you don't just get hyponatremia. A lot of the time it's because of a med, right? Like if it's like someone accidentally taking, you know, their thiazide and their combo pill thiazide that's new, right? Or like someone starting an SSRI and getting like SIDH, right? So there's a lot of that. Or if they have show up with like neutropenia, right? Because that's also not super common. So you want to think like, well, is there a med doing that? And then we also do a lot of medication histories, like best possible medication histories for people that are, where it's not super obvious. Like if they're not from long-term care or assisted living, they'll have like a list of meds, or if they don't have blister packs, right? Or if they're on like a bunch of stuff, then you will sit down and go through like everything with them. Like you said, like all the OTCs and all the meds. And then we're also part of the code team. So when there's codes that come in via ambulance, they're like, they'll call like overhead the code team to the code room and you're part of that team. So what we do in that situation is like, what I like to do is like they wheel in the patient and the doctor and the nurses are all doing kind of their airway breathing and circulation, right? And like making sure the patient's like staying alive. And then what I'll do is I'll quickly go through their neck hair and see like, well, what is this person's like rough history? Like, what are their medical conditions? Like, what meds were they on, you know? And then I'll tell the doc right away if I'm like, hey, this guy's on an anticoagulant, right? Or like, if they say that he's, if he or she is like some kind of consciousness, you know, if they think it's like a poisoning or something, I'll be like, whoa, what could they have been poisoned with? Like, do they have a bunch of benzos or sleeping pills or beta blockers? You know, like, what are we seeing in the patient? Like, does that line up with their neck hair? So I'll kind of do that for the doctor kind of quickly. And then you like bounce, and then you help the nurses double check doses of stuff. So like, if they want to give them, you know, 10 milligrams of something, then they have to like draw it up, and you like double check their math, right? To be like, okay, we want to draw up, you know, 0.5 mils of this, and then dilute it down to like this, right? So you'll sit there with like your parenteral monograph open on the computer, and you'll be like helping the nurse double check their work. Because like, even though you've all done this a million times, like your mind, it's still a little bit stressful. So your mind kind of goes blank and you're like, oh, why can't I do this simple, like C1 V1 equals C2 X, right? Like, why is that so hard right now? Even though I've done this like a lot, right? So we do that too. Yeah, Emerge is different. It's a nice change from working on like the unit or switching to pack and then getting to work in Emerge. Like it's a little bit different. So it's like a nice difference to have once in a while.
I was gonna say, that'd be definitely super like unique and interesting, because like, I haven't heard like a lot of pharmacists working in an emergency department. That might be the first one that I've actually ever really heard about, like a pharmacist. And it's cool, like it sounds like, you know, you have like a huge impact, right? Because yeah, they like the doctors and the nurses have their hands full with like when a patient's coming in coding from a heart attack or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of nice to have a pharmacist run through their meds and be able to kind of pick out like, this might have caused it, or maybe this is a concern. If you're going to give them this medication, like you should be aware that they are taking this. So I think that
unique. It's definitely very helpful. I think, like, especially like there's definitely times when you're like, when they'll like something will happen and you'll be like, oh, that's because they're on this, right? Or like, I think they took, you know, a bunch of Tylenol 3s because they're breaking out in like a rash, right? Instead of their sertraline, because they're like kind of presenting with serotonin syndrome or like a bunch of codeine, right? So it's, yeah, I like it. It's helpful.
Is that like a 50-50 split for you, or is that just like a once in a while when they need a pharmacist down there? Is like there's a full-time pharmacist down in the
So like my unit has me and two other pharmacists on it. So like there's an Emerge team, the same way there's like the unit 78 surgery team. So there's a team of pharmacists that cover Emerge, like the day shifts, you know, Monday to Friday. And then all of us take turns, including them, working like the evening and weekend shifts in Emerge. So like, I don't have to do it very often. It's every few months I'll have like four or five shifts in Emerge.
That's awesome. And I know we were joking before we started this, but you know, you were saying before we started the podcast that students can select to do rotation there. Is that just for the students out there that are wondering, is that like part of the rotation, or is that like not a thing? Cause I mean, I know a lot of us, it's like, you're never going to get experience in the ER unless you like do it on rotation.
No, there's students that they do their fourth year rotations in Emerge. They don't have to work like the evenings or anything. You work like Monday to Friday, you know, like 7:30 to 3:30, right?
Wow.
Yeah,
I think that'd be super cool, because like, again, that's just a niche where it's like, you know, you think of like onco or cardiology or ID, but you never really think of like the ER. But I think that'd be like a really unique opportunity. What do you think, John?
Well, I was just gonna ask Nathan, do you have like a like most memorable aha moment working in the emergency department where you're like, man, good thing I caught that?
Oh yeah, there's loads. Yeah, and they're not like, I don't know if I have a most memorable one, but it's like there's lots of them when you'll be like looking at something. Like I had somebody come in once who was started on linazolid, and they were presenting to Emerge with neutropenia, right? It was neutropenia, and that's like a rare but like not super rare side effect of linazolid. And so this person was like in Emerge, they have like neutropenia, right? And they're getting, they're being worked up, and I like go on to their neck care and like look through it. And I'm like, oh, they're just starting on linazolid, you know? And like, I'm pretty sure this is why they're here. And when told, you know, the patient, and like when told the doc, and then kind of had a plan to go on what to switch to, right? There's like lots of stuff like that. They're not, I wouldn't say lots, but like it definitely happens when you're like, hey, I know why this person's here. It's because of this. And then you kind of like at least help them figure it out quickly, right? Or like once there was a guy who was he had a cough and he returned from travel to like the state. This was like a couple years ago. So there wasn't COVID, you know, so it's not like he had COVID. And I was like looking through his neck hair. I'm like, this guy has a cough and he needs oxygen. They're like thinking pneumonia and stuff. And then I was reading through like old consults on neck hair. And I read like one from like years ago. And it was like, this guy had a STEMI and it was presented as like a cough that wouldn't go away for like a couple days. And I'm like, oh, this guy has a cough that wouldn't go away for a couple days. And now he has a cough that won't go away for a couple days. So I went and told the physician pretty quick. I was like, I think we should pull troponins on this guy because like he's presenting the same way as the STEMI from like 10 years ago. And like, sure enough, he was having a heart attack, you know? And so there's some things like that where like, you know, if I don't need to see 10 patients, like I'm not following up on a bunch of different people in Emerge, right? So like, if you want to really sink into a patient you're helping, like you can spend like a lot of time doing that, right? Or like occasionally then we'll get into people who like there's that new diabetes called like LADA, right? Latent autoimmune diabetes as an adult, which is kind of fancy way of saying like type 1 diabetes, but it presents itself as an adult and it's slightly different. But there's been like a couple times when people have shown up having like DKAs, but they have type 2 diabetes. And then you get into like their labs and their med history, right? And you're like, I think this person might have like LADA and not type 2, right? Because like they're super thin and none of these secretagogues work. So there's definitely times with like stuff I remember like that.
That's insane.
That's crazy. Yeah, I know.
Exciting stuff, man.
Yeah, it's exciting. Yeah, it feels good when you do it too.
I think that, like I said, I think that's, you know, I know for me, like that's kind of why I wanted to get in healthcare, to really make a big difference. And like that's like there's no better way to see, you know, yourself making a difference than, you know, a guy's having a heart attack and you're the one who recognizes the symptoms and you can get it. Like you're making a huge difference in the treatment plan because they might have just treated him with a cough, right? But you recognize the guy was having a heart attack and
yeah, I mean they would have figured it out, right? It's just, you just like helps figure it out faster.
Yeah. You but know? The sooner the better, I guess, when it comes to stuff like that, right? Heart attack, stroke, serious conditions. I think that's cool. And I think that, yeah, like, you know, for a lot of us pharmacists, you know, or pharmacy students who are going to be pharmacists one day, and even pharmacists who are listening to this, again, it's just that whole idea that there is more out there than just like filling prescriptions or, you know, even like you said, doing med recs, and that's still probably part of your job, but there's a lot more to it than just collecting medications, right? So
yeah, now I barely do any med recs, which is awesome.
I'm jealous.
Definitely. I am too.
But moving away from the emergency department, you know, a big thing you talked about at that career night when we first met you was, you know, optimization of medications pre and post op. You know, obviously it's not the same as a patient coming in emergency department and you're just reading up on, you know, what medications they have. So in that sphere, what is that in comparison to the emergency department? And you kind of pioneered this. So what is going into making sure this process is done correctly for patients?
Well, it's like way different than Emerge, right? Because in Emerge, you just kind of want to know like what medications are they on, like what medical conditions they have. And then they'll go upstairs, right? Like I know you guys, I didn't really watch the show either, but there's used to be an old TV show called ER, and it was George Clooney was not in it when he was really young. That's how old it was. They would have all these stories where like people would come in and like something would happen and then they would just like disappear. And that's a lot what Emerge is like, because like when they go upstairs, that's it. But in the pre-admission clinic, what we'll do is like, oh man, like a lot of it I think has to do with doing a really good history of what's going on. So for example, and a lot of the pre-admission clinic stuff is standardized. Like, you know, if someone's on an ACE inhibitor, you hold it the morning of surgery because that's what the guidelines say. And people, when they go under general anesthesia, if they're on an ACE inhibitor, a lot of time their blood pressure will just go like boof. So you hold that the morning of surgery. That's like, everybody does that. But then there's other things, like if someone's on a biologic, right, then you know that there's an increased risk of infection postoperatively if they're on the biologic, and there's delayed wound healing, and like let's say it's Remicade, right? So it's like the worst one for that kind of stuff. Then you need to do a really good history, I find, because someone might be on Remicade because they failed Ozempic, or not Ozempic, but like Cosentyx or something else. They failed like another biologic and they have Crohn's. And at the end of their dosing interval, their symptoms come back, right? And they've never like forgotten to take it. They've never missed or delayed an infusion before. So there's a lot more history involved, because then, you know, the guideline says something like hold the next infusion of Remicade until 2 weeks postoperatively, because by then you would know if they had an a surgical site infection or not. And you've given like a lot of time to heal. But like in this specific person, because you did a really good job of getting to know them by talking to them and going over the medical history, you're like, no, that doesn't make sense. Like, we shouldn't do that, because this person failed like Enbrel and they failed Orencia, and now they're on Remicade, and like, I don't want them to fail Remicade. And like, and we've discussed it, and they agree that they should not delay their dose, and they understand there's a little bit of an increased risk of infection and delayed wound healing. But like, if they have a full on Crohn's flare, you know, like then they might end up being admitted and put on a high dose of prednisone and not be able to use Remicade again, because they already failed like two other drugs. So in the pre-admission clinic, it's like a whole lot more getting to know people and like their history to help them make a good decision, because like they're the ones that are taking or holding medications. So it's a lot different than Emerge.
So do you, you know, we talked about, you know, maybe pharmacists not covering wards for 24 hours, but is that where in your mind you see pharmacy practice extending, is having those abilities to do really in-depth, you know, conversations with the patients, figuring out what works for patients, even despite guidelines or whatnot? Is that where you're seeing the direction of the profession going?
Yeah, I think so. At least that's where I'm taking, I think, my job, right? It is like, I feel like eventually, you know, in terms of just dispensing meds, like we're going to get machines to do that eventually, right? It's all just going to be automated. And so I think like, if we're really good at helping people understand their meds, and like figuring out on a person to person basis of like what's the best treatment for them specifically, is I don't know. I feel like that's the kind of direction the profession slowly moving to. I feel very strongly that like if it's in my scope of practice and I feel comfortable doing it because I have like the right skills to, like it doesn't involve physical assessment or, you know, being able to look at imaging of some kind, like I'm totally going to do it, right?
I think you'd be glad to hear that, Jared.
No, I think I know, like, I mean, that's always been like a kind of concern of mine too. And like, I think it's important you address it, right? That, you know, like the filling aspect. Yeah. Like I agree. I think, you know, a lot of that filling role can just be done by like a machine or somebody who's paid like minimum, like, you know what I mean? Like you don't need a pharmacist to necessarily fill, you know, you need a pharmacist to make clinical decisions. And I think that's where like you need that human interaction where it's like, you have that dialogue, and I think it's really cool and awesome that you like, that's where you're trying to push your practice, right? Is more towards that clinical role of things. And I think we need more pharmacists to be trying to do that, right? To kind of expand the scope of pharmacy across Alberta, whether it be in hospital or in community practice. And yeah, I think, you know, before we wrap up, you know, do you mind just kind of giving a bit of, you know, at Hospital Pharmacy Karuna, you briefly mentioned your involvement with the acute pain services in Calgary. Do you mind just giving us a bit of insight into your motivations with this involvement and kind of what you, you know, you hope to achieve with that?
So I worked in surgery, so like bump into the acute pain service at our site pretty often. Right. And the acute pain service is like, there's a nurse, at least at my site, there's a nurse practitioner and an anesthesiologist. And they like round on people who have super high acute pain or like complex pain needs. So someone who's say on like chronic opiates already. Right. So they would need the acute pain service to go and help them out. Or if they had like, you know, neck fascia or some kind of surgical debridement or an amputation, of like a foot, you know, like they have like a lot of pain. So they need acute pain services. It's not enough. Like we're not going to be able to do it without them. So at our site, we also have a transitional pain clinic where people will, who have like those same people, right, who have like really complex pain needs, when they go home after surgery, whether it be elective or like urgent surgery, they'll be followed in the community, or they can be referred to this transitional pain clinic where those same nurse practitioner and anesthesiologist will like phone them up at home, and they'll help them manage their pain in the community for a certain amount of time. So like when they're transitioning back into the community, right, they're transitional, and we share an office in the pre-admission clinic. So the opportunity came up to help write the Calgary's own guidelines on how to manage people taking buprenorphine, and more specifically like buprenorphine naloxone around the time of surgery or like acute pain, right? Because the point of taking buprenorphine naloxone is to like block all your opioid receptors. So you have all these people, like what if you actually want to stimulate those receptors because you have like a broken leg, right? So it becomes a little bit of a problem. So I had the opportunity to start working on with them, and we wrote the Calgary's own guidelines for it. And I was like the group's pharmacist. So I like, I know a whole lot about buprenorphine pharmacology now. And then when I did that, I just started offering to give presentations about it everywhere. And so I do a lot of that now too. I do a lot of like education about how to manage buprenorphine, naloxone around the time of surgery, or like what to think about really. So really I got involved because I was like, I happened to know those people already, and they were looking for a committee, like they were looking for members of this group. And so when I got in and they were like, well, can you write us like a pharmacology about this? So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll write pharmacology, you know, summary of this. And I just went like as like in depth as I possibly could, you know, like I did all of the literature searches, and like I found all of the case reports of people failing pain therapy on Suboxone, right? So yeah, so I kind of just ran with it. And then now I do, I like more or less, I just help support the doctors, the nurse practitioner in that area. Like I don't do a lot of the acute pain managing myself, right? But like I'll help them answer questions or like help them make a plan for patients.
Looking back, right, you graduated in 2012. And I remember you also sending us, you know, you were sports rep, you're responsible for putting together the alumni hockey game. Did you ever envision yourself, you know, being part of writing up a pain guideline 9 years later? Like, isn't that crazy to think about? And, you know, where are you looking forward? Like, what's next for you?
I actually know what's next, but like what I'm working on right now. I didn't really think of it that way. I kind of like I started working I found once I got good at something, like in the hospital, like once you kind of get really good at your job because you've been doing it a while, you start seeing areas where you're like, that's a terrible way of doing that, you know? And then I think at some point, I just went like instead of saying like, man, someone should do something about that, I was like, I'm going to do something about that. And then I just slowly started working my way into doing that thing, right? So for example, like right now, what we do at our pre-admission clinic for people with diabetes is if we think they're going to show up for surgery and have hyperglycemia, either before or after surgery, what we'll do as pharmacists is we'll prescribe them correction scales of insulin after calculating their insulin sensitivity, and we'll like prescribe it directly into their surgical encounter, and it'll start before surgery. So when the patient gets there to the hospital, and then it'll go like every 4 hours until post-op day one. And that's because we found that people were doing like they weren't doing the best job as a surgeons and anesthesiologists of like managing blood sugars on the day of surgery. And so we're like, well, we can prescribe, right? Like I can prescribe, I meet these people in my clinic and I have like a huge, really deep understanding of their diabetes. So like, why don't I just manage this, right? It takes me like a minute to put in that that order, and like I standardized the drug, the dose, and like the administration time between like day surgery, the OR, the PACU, back to day surgery, discharge. But like, no, I didn't really think about this kind of stuff when I was in school. But I'm sure like you guys do too, when you get good at something, you kind of figure out how to do it better. And then eventually you see areas that can be improved. And instead of just like hoping someone else would improve it, I just started kind of improving it myself. And then you get more comfortable doing that, right? And you're like, well, I'm actually pretty good at this. And so you keep doing it, right? You just keep, and then you find another thing that you want to improve, and you do that too. And it just kind of like slowly snowballs over time.
Your thoughts, Jared?
Oh, I think it's just so super cool. Like, I think, you know, that's kind of why I would love to get into hospital pharmacy at some point in my career. I think it's just making that difference and trying to do things in your own way, right? You know, I think, like you said, there's a lot that can be improved in different areas. And I think people, sometimes, like you said, I think there's that concern of stepping on people's toes, you know, a bit concerned, but you just got to try to find your niche and where you can like best fit to help standardize and make things a little bit more smooth. But, you know, just before we end, just kind of to go on with that diabetes stuff. So is that kind of what you're working on? Like you were saying, is that the new project that's ongoing right now for you, or is there something else that.
So we've been doing that for like 2 years now. We started, you know, cause you have to start small. You can't just throw this new huge intervention at people. So we started with doing like convincing them to let us put in a once dose correction scale just for pre-op use, because we found that people who had pre-operative hyperglycemia weren't having it treated before surgery. And then after a year of that, we like sat down and went through all the old charts, and like it worked really well, you know, because we were doing something where nothing was being done before. And then we expanded it to the current practice, which is like the Q4H correction scale that starts preoperatively. And then COVID kind of threw a wrench in evaluating that, right? Because like I was going to evaluate it sooner, but you know, COVID slowed down all our elective surgeries and stopped. And that's like, that's okay. So I think the next thing I'm going to do is kind of evaluate that and see how well that went, which I assume went well because we were just kind of improving the process that was already there. And then I'm not sure what I want to do next. I'm not sure where to take it next kind of thing. Like I want to keep doing something, but that's kind of the next thing is figuring out, you know, did this improve blood sugars in our surgical patients? And if it did, then like, well, how can I make it even better? Like, how can I like push this even further? Right. Cause they let me do it once, then they let me do it every 4 hours. Like, well, now what can I do to like make it even better? Right. So that's kind of where I'll go, but I don't know what that's going to be yet.
Well, I think I can speak for Jared and a lot of pharmacy students that we're very, very grateful that you've come onto the show. And we're very grateful that, you know, as we're still learning, that there's individuals out there who are paving the road for pharmacy practice. So with that, I think that's the end of the episode. Is there any last words you want to leave the listeners, Nathan?
I don't know. Like, you guys will all be fine, probably.
We hope so.
Yeah,
we
like hopefully you'll get to go. Like, I'm sure right now school sucks a little bit. But like, I guess it'll one day, like for the H1N1 pandemic was for me, you'll all be like, hey, remember that time that it was like in school when everyone had the flu, right? But yeah, I don't know. My parting words are like, I mean, you guys will, it's like, it's not that hard to be like progressive and progress the profession, right? It's really not that hard. You'll all be able to do it pretty easily.
Well, those are fantastic words.
I think it's straight simple, but I think it's awesome. I think that's important, right? I think a lot of us, even myself, just hearing what you've done, I'm like, I don't know if I'll be able to even come close to that. But you know, I think it like at the same time, like makes me want to try and to push the profession. So thank you for coming on and sharing your stories with us. And I know a lot of people will be very appreciative to be able to hear this as well. So with that, John, if you don't mind taking it away.
Yeah. So thank you everyone for listening. Jared and I are always working hard to create the best content for you guys. So stay tuned for more amazing episodes. See you, everyone.